Okay, this week's parsha is Parshas Devarim, and so I'd like to share this evening Divrei Torah that were given by the Shemi Shmuel, Rav Shmuel Bornstein. Welcome. In the year 1919, Rav Shmuel Bornstein, the Sachet Shava Rebbe, he's a very great man. We've learned a lot from him. He was one of the leaders of Polish Jewry during the period of time that he was Rebbe of Sachetschak. He was the grandson of the Kutzker Rebbe. A lot of the Divrei Torah of Kutzk that we have are in his merit because he quotes it in his Sefer. And he was a remarkable individual who, on the one hand, his scholarship of Torah and his immersion in Midrashim and Gemaros and Zohar just emerges from his Divrei Torah that are very, very scholarly. But there's also a tremendous amount of warmth that was within all of this structure. So while his Divrei Torah are very classical, they're structured Dvar Torah, questions, answers, further applications, but yet beneath it you feel the warmth of his feelings for Hashem. So, he has lots of four Divrei Torah here that he delivered in the year 1919. Let's try to learn them and hopefully absorb them. Our parsha begins with Eilat Dvarim Asher Diber Moshe Kol Yisrael. These are the words that Moshe said to the entirety of the Jewish people. The Eivera Yardain, on the other side of the Jordan River, Bamidbar, in the desert, Ba'arava, in the area called Arava, Mol Suf, opposite Suf, Bein Paran uVein Tofel, between Paran and Tofel, Velavan, and a place called Lavan, and Chatzeros, and a place called Dizahav. So Rashi says, you know, this doesn't make any sense. You know, if the Torah wanted to say Moshe said something in a certain place, it'd be one location, right? Eilat Rima Shediver Moshe, Beivar Yardin. These are the things that Moshe said on the other side of the Jordan. But here you have place after place, Bamidbar, Ba'arava, Molsuf, Bein Paran, Bein Tofel, Lavan, Chatzeros, Dizahav. So Rashi suggests that really all of these places are actually references through hints to sins of the Jewish people. Moshe is about to die, so since Moshe is about to leave this world, so now's the moment when he gives rebuke. And he gives rebuke through a very sensitive way. He doesn't say, you sinned with the sin of the golden calf. He mentions places. So first he said, Midbar, desert. Desert is a reference to the fact that the Jewish people at one point complain and say, we wish we would die in the desert. Arava is a reference to the sin of Baal Peor, of the idol Peor that happened in Arvos Moav. Mol Suf is a reference to the sin at the Red Sea, when the Jewish people say, what are there, no graves for us in Egypt? Paran and Tofel, Rashi says there is no place Paran, there is no place Tofel. There's no place, there's no place Tofel and Lavan. So rather, Rashi says it means Paran is the sin of the spies, and Tofel and Lavan is really one place, that one sin that they were complaining about, the man. So we have the sin of Baal Peor, the sin of not wanting to go into the Red Sea, the sin of the spies, the sin of complaining about the man, and then Chatzerot, that's the sin that would be the sin of Korach, or alternatively, that's the sin of Miriam, speaking Lashon Hara, and Dizahav, the last, is the sin of the golden calf. So Shemi Shmuel points out that what we have here is seven sins. The sin of Baal Peor, the sin of saying we want to die in the desert, the sin at the Red Sea, the sin of complaining about the man, the sin of the spies, and then either the sin of Korach or the sin of Miriam, and finally seventh, the sin of the golden calf. So Shemi Shmuel says, why did Moshe mention seven sins? What's the significance of mentioning seven sins? And another point to think about is, the Medrash already raises this point, the truth is that the Jewish people who Moshe is talking about, is talking to, they didn't really commit any of these sins. Because remember, Moshe is talking the 40th year. The people who committed the sin of the golden calf, the people who committed the sin of the spies, the people who were part of the sin of Korach, or the complaints about Yamsuf, they didn't want to go in. Those were the first generation that came out. Because of the sin of the spies, that whole generation died out. This is now their children who are about to go into the land of Israel. So why is Moshe mentioning sins that don't really relate to these people? These are the sins of their fathers. And why is Moshe mentioning it? If he wanted to rebuke the fathers, he should have rebuked them. But here it's the sons who are going into the land. So two questions. Number one, why seven sins? And number two, why tell the generation that's entering the land of these sins that they themselves didn't do? These are sins that their fathers did. So Shemi Shmuel says that there is an idea that there are seven primary sources of tumah, seven primary sources of impurity. There's mace, a dead body, which is the strongest tumah. Then you have a sheretz. A sheretz is one of the eight rodents that the Torah says create impurity. If there's a dead one of them that falls into an earthenware vessel or touches something, then there is a dead animal that also creates an impurity, a carcass. There is a flow of blood from a woman during her period called nida. And there's another type of flow, not nida, but it's the flow of ziva, gonorrhea in a man. In a woman, it's blood, but at a different time of the month. Then there's a woman who gives birth. And then there is tzara'as, leprosy. So there are seven primary tumos. Maybe that's the pshat in the Gemara and Maseches Kedushin. Gemara relates a story that Rav Acha came to a town and there was this demon in the Beis Medrash. So they didn't want, they wanted to get rid of the demon, so no one wanted to host Rav Acha. So the demon appeared to Rav Acha as a seven-headed serpent. So why a seven-headed serpent? Because there are seven main tumos, seven main impurities. Now the truth is, there are another three impurities, but if a person has impurity from these places, if he would enter the temple, he would not be liable for entering the temple in a state of impurity. That is, the impurity of the person who creates the Parah Adumah, the red cow, the impurity of carrying the water and the ashes of the red cow, the person who takes care of the goat that gets sent to the wilderness on Yom Kippur, the Sar Mishtaleach, and the person who takes care of the person who burns the bulls and the goats that are supposed to be burned, like the Par Helam Davar Shel Tzibur, the bull that's brought when the Sanhedrin makes a mistake in their rulings. So, in total, there are 10 impurities, 7 of them create the impurity that you're not, that based on it, if you enter the Beit HaMikdash, you'd be punished. And 3 created impurity, but if you'd enter the Beit HaMikdash with them, you wouldn't be punished. So Shemi Shmuel here takes a classical idea that's found in many books of Kabbalah, that the Kabbalah divides the human personality into two parts. Gimel Mochin, 3 sections of intellect, and Zayin Midos, 7 emotions. The 3 sections of intellect are Chachma Bina Das, wisdom, understanding, and internalization. And the 7 attributes are Chesed, meaning loving, Gvura, strength, Teferes, balance, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and finally Malchus. So there are a total of 10. You know, 7 lowly attributes and 3 intellectual attributes. And perhaps based on these 10, that's why Hashem promises to Avram Avinu to give him a land of 10 nations. Keni, Knizi, Kadmoni, as well as Knaani, Prizi, Yevusi, Amori, Chivi. So these 10 nations correspond to these 10 parts. So now we can understand what's going on. Moshe is giving rebuke to people who didn't commit these sins. So why does Moshe tell them about these sins? Because Moshe talks about 7 sins. He doesn't talk about 10 sins, he talks about 7 sins. Why 7 sins? Because the 7 sins correspond to the 7 nations. Now these people are going to go into the land of Israel and conquer what? They're going to conquer a land of 7 nations. So Moshe tells them, you need to perfect yourselves from these 7 attributes in order to be able to conquer the land of the 7 nations. Internally, you need to first clean yourself from your whatever impurities of Chesed, of Gvura, of Tiferes, of Netzach, of Hod, of Yesod, and of Malchus. You have to cleanse yourself from your 7 emotions. When you've cleansed yourself, then you'll have the strength to go into this land of 7 nations and defeat the 7 nations. So it's true, they don't have these sins, but they need to have this holiness because they have to fight these 7 nations. To defeat the 7 nations, who are really manifestations of the 7 types of impurity, it's necessary to be internally pure in these 7 realms. So now there is a fascinating medrash that we can now understand. We find that the Torah says, when the Jewish people were in Parshas Baalosa, were still at Sinai, that Hashem tells Moshe to tell the people, "Pnu usu lachem, turn and travel, uvo har ha'emori vel kol shechinav, and come to the mountain of the Emori and all of its neighbors." So the Sifri says, the neighbors of the Emori are Ammon, Moab, and Seir, areas of Jordan. You know, Seir, I think, is, there's all this talk about Petra. Petra is the red city. So that's Edom. That's the red area, the area of Esav. The saviors will climb Mount Zion and they'll judge. They'll look over at the mountains of the Jordan and we will judge Har Esav. So really that territory should be the land of the Jews. That's part of the 10 nations. The 10 nations that were promised to Avram, the 3 that we didn't get, are Ammon, Moab, and Edom, the relatives of Avram. So we were originally going to get them. Had we not committed the sin of the spies, we would have in fact gotten all 10 lands. So the only reason why we didn't get these 3 areas is because of the sin of the spies. That's why initially we were told to travel to conquer these lands. Now, let's try to understand this. Why was it that we were going to get it, and then it turns out that we didn't get it because of the sin of the spies? Why does the sin of the spies cause us not to get these extra 3 lands? So, you know, one of the arguments Moshe Rabbeinu makes with the Jewish people is that Moshe tells the Jews, "I understand you. The spies come back and they say, well, it's not a good land. There are giants there. We'll never defeat them. But look at how you're living in the desert. You have clouds of glory. You have man. You have miracles. So what are you worried about a bunch of giants, right? Hashem's doing all these miracles for you in the desert. You're worried about going into the land of Israel? What's there to worry about? You have all these miracles with you." So that's really a very good argument. What were the people worried about? Why do the people who hear the negativity about the land start crying? They say, "Oh my gosh, it's so terrible. It's the tragedy. What do you mean? Hashem's doing miracles for you. So you can't do the miracle of defeating the Canaanites and the Amorites and the Hivites. What are they all worried about?" So Shemi Shmuel says a very powerful thing. Very, very powerful. The generation of the desert was very wise. They're referred to as Dor Deah, the generation of great understanding. If you look at all of Jewish history as one big body, the generation of the desert would be the mind. They were deep understanding. So they understood the following. They said, listen, who's going to lead us in Israel? Yehoshua ben Nun. Here we are in the desert. Yeah, there are miracles, there are clouds of glory, there's man coming down from the heaven. But who's our leader? Moshe Rabbeinu is our leader. So when Moshe Rabbeinu is our leader, there are all sorts of open miracles. But when we go to the land of Israel, we're not going to be led by Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a new world. We're going to be led by Yehoshua ben Nun. Now, how did they know that Yehoshua ben Nun was going to lead them? Because back in Parshas Baaloscha, when Moshe is overwhelmed by all the complaints, and Hashem says to Moshe, appoint 70 elders to help you out, there are two men who don't come, Eldad and Medad. They stay in the camp, and they say prophecy in the camp. Now, what were they saying? The Gemara says in Masechet Sanhedrin, Eldad and Medad were saying, Yehoshua machnis u'Moshe meis. Moshe is going to die, and Yehoshua will bring the Jewish people into the land. But no one ever told that to Moshe. No one ever said to Moshe what Eldad and Medad said. So the people feel the following. There are miracles in the desert. Yeah, because Moshe Rabbeinu is leading us. And Moshe Rabbeinu is on such a high level that he can have miracles. But when we go into the land, we're not going to be led by Moshe Rabbeinu anymore. We're going to be led by Yehoshua. That means we're not going to have open miracles. If we're not going to have open miracles, and the spies tell us that it's a land with giants and a rough terrain, then we're going for a disaster. We can't go into the land then. We'd be crazy to go into the land. So one second, this is a very good argument now. So why were they wrong? Why are they wrong? Why is it such a terrible sin to believe the spies? There's a really logical claim. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, look at all the miracles God does for you. He can take care in Israel too. But there's an answer. The miracles God does for us, that's because we have Moshe as our leader. We're going into the land. We're not going to have Moshe as our leader anymore. Now we're going to be led by Yehoshua. We can't expect such miracles. So the answer is, even when everything makes sense, if God tells you to do something, it's not the time to be so smart. When God says to do, we're supposed to put aside whatever we understand and just listen. Moshe Rabbeinu said, go. That's it. They should have gone. They should have gone like at Yamsuf. At Yamsuf, they didn't say, well, what's going to be? We're going to drown. Moshe says, go, we're going. It's a big challenge for people of intellect who always try to understand to surrender their intellect.
It's one of their only problems. They have many problems. People have intellect.
So had they been able to do that, to surrender their intellect, then Hashem would have given them his intellect. Then they would have really gotten intellect. That's what we find with Moshe Rabbeinu. Pasuk says, the Gemara says in Brachos, Beschar ki yare mihabit, in the merit because he was afraid to look. Zacha l'tmunas Hashem yabit. He merited to be able to look at Hashem. Had they rejected all their own arguments and said, you know what? Moshe says to go. We're going to go. We don't have any fear. Whatever it is, doesn't make sense. We're going to go. Then they would have given away their intellect. If they would give away their intellect, then Hashem gives them intellect. If Hashem gives you intellect, you can defeat even the enemies that come from the misuse of Chachma, Bina, and Das, because you have Hashem's intellect. Then we would have gotten not just the land of seven nations, we would have gotten the land of 10 nations. Again, the Medrash says that had the Jews not listened to the spies, we would have conquered the lands of Amon, Moab, and Edom. We would have gotten the land of 10 nations. We said, why would we get the land of 10 nations if we would have not listened to the spies? The answer is, because if we would, what would have led us to not listen to the spies? Logic says to listen to the spies. What would have led us to not listen to the spies would have been to surrender our logic and just to listen to what Hashem is telling us to do through Moshe Rabbeinu. if we would have surrendered our logic and just listened to what Hashem is telling us to do through Moshe Rabbeinu, then we would have merited to be blessed with Hashem's intellect. And if we have Hashem's intellect, then we would have the ability to conquer the three nations that correspond to Chachma, Bina, and Das.
Rabbi, did we have an obligation to believe in Yehoshua just as much as Moshe Rabbeinu?
Yeah, for sure.
Because he was a student.
Right.
So we should have believed that if he said so, if Moshe, he was taking over, it means he does the accomplishment of...
That's right, exactly.
So that is actually also part intelligence.
That's right. That's part of the problem. So because the Jewish people didn't surrender their intellect, so that's why we didn't merit to get the land of those three nations. So now the next generation that's going into the land is only going to go into a land of seven nations. But because we're going into a land of seven nations, Moshe Rabbeinu first warned us of seven sins, to tell us to fix within ourselves these seven challenges so that we would be able to go into the land. That's one thought that the Shem Yishmuel has in this week's parasha. Another thought that he has in this week's parasha is that the last of the seven sins is Dizahav. Rashi says, Hochichan al ha'egel, Moshe is rebuking the Jewish people for the sin of the golden calf. Sha'asu b'shvil rov zav sha'elahem. They made the golden calf because they had too much gold. Shanama, the verse says, V'chesef her beisila, I increased her silver, v'zahav asula bal, and then because of the gold, they made a statue. So this is a reference to the sin of the golden calf. So asks the Shem Yishmuel, the sin of the golden calf was not the last sin. It doesn't happen after the sin of Miriam, Chatzeros. It doesn't happen after the sin of Korach. It happened before a lot of these sins. It happened before Paran, the sin of the spies. So why is it listed last? So Shem Yishmuel suggests the following answer. Kuzari tells us that the Jews who made the golden calf didn't mean to worship idols. It's like someone who sees a beautiful building, he thinks it's a shul, he bows to it, and then he finds out, no, it's not a shul, it's really a church. They meant well. They meant well. So if they meant well, why was it such a terrible sin? Right? Kuzari says they were trying to remember the revelation at Sinai. They had pure motivations. Well, if they have such pure motivations, why is it such a terrible sin that every time we get punished, partially we're being punished for the sin of the golden calf? So the Shem Yishmuel suggests the following. Even though the Jewish people meant well, the sin was that we didn't wait. Sometimes when an issue comes up, take it slow. Don't make a decision right away. Think about it. Moshe Rabbeinu is not here. He was supposed to be here. We thought he was supposed to be here at the sixth hour. He's not here. Let's think. Let's see. Right away to jump. We need a golden calf. Give it some time. The Jewish people didn't give it any time. They right away rush. They go to Chur. Chur says he can't make it. They kill him. There wasn't any Yeshiva Das. There wasn't any slow and deliberate thought. You know, in Hebrew we have two words. Atzel, that's a lazy person. And Masun, a deliberate person. What's the difference? They're both slow. The difference is that a lazy person is too lazy to be deliberate. The deliberate person's not lazy. He's putting a lot of effort. Because he's putting in so much effort to try to figure it out, he can't act quickly. The lazy person is too lazy to put in the effort to think, and that's why he rushes. The lazy person is lazy, he does things quickly, because he's too lazy to actually try to figure it all out. What's the right thing? What's the correct thing? The Jewish people, with the sin of the golden calf, are lazy. We don't allow ourselves to be deliberate. So therefore, that was the terrible crime. Find it in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says that Hashem tells Moshe, Saru maher min aderech. They quickly moved away from the path. They quickly rushed away. They didn't think. They didn't wait. And that was the challenge. They should have waited. should have deliberated. They shouldn't have rushed. And that's part of the rebuke. Now we know sometimes it's a good thing to rush. It's reason makdim le mitzvos, right? Those who are doing a mitzvah, it's a great thing to rush and to do things right away. So you could say that the people who made the golden calf, they thought it was a mitzvah. They thought they're bowing to a shul, and really they're bowing to a church. So if they think it's a mitzvah, there isn't such a claim. Then Bavasa Tishka Tamid, they're rushing to do a mitzvah. So how do you know that they weren't rushing to do a mitzvah? Because you look and you see that they did other averos. They do the sin of Korach and the sin of the spies and the sin of Miriam. They're not just running to listen to God. They do many, many sins. So that reveals that the sin of the golden calf wasn't that they were running to do a mitzvah. It reveals that the sin of the golden calf was that they were too lazy to think things through. And they rushed to do the wrong thing. That's why the sin of the golden calf is mentioned last. Only after all the other sins, that reveals that what they were doing was not just rushing to do a mitzvah. They were just lazy intellectually. And since they were lazy intellectually, that's why, in fact, they were committing a terrible sin. Now, there's another very famous medrash here in the beginning of Parshas Dvarim. The medrash applies, I mentioned it the other day, between Mincha and Maariv. The medrash applies to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Pasuk, Marpe Lashon Eitz Chayim. What heals the tongue is the tree of life. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu was not a man of words. When Hashem tells him, go down to Egypt, he says, Lo ish dvarim anochi, I'm not a man of words. And now suddenly, Eila dvarim asher diber Moshe, these are all the words that Moshe spoke. What happened? What happened was he got the Torah, he was healed through the Torah. That's what the Medrash is going to say. But before it gets to that, the Medrash starts by saying a halacha. Are you allowed to write a Sefer Torah in other languages? So the Gemara says, well, maybe, Medrash says, maybe there's a difference between Tefillin and a Sefer Torah. Tefillin has to be written in Hebrew. Sefer Torah can be written in other languages. Rabbi Gamliel says, no, even a Sefer Torah can only be written in Greek, and the only reason why they allowed Greek was because of the whole story with Talmai HaMelech, as the Gemara says in Megillah. And Hashem said that Greek has a, there's a certain beauty, Yaftalokim Liefes, the beauty of Greece can reside in the tent of Yefes. Look at Torah, Torah so special it can heal even Greek. Through Torah you can even have Greek in Torah. So Rabbi Levi said, you have to look to see how special Torah is, that it can heal Greek. Our parasha shows you how special Torah is. Moshe Rabbeinu, before he had the Torah, he's lowish dvarim, he's not a man of words. But now that he's had the Torah, Eila dvarim asher diber Moshe. So asks the Shem Yishmuel, now Moshe Rabbeinu is a man of words? We've had Moshe being a man of words for a long time. In Sefer Shmos, in Sefer Vayikra, Bamidbar. What do you mean now he becomes a man of words? And furthermore, Moshe Rabbeinu, according to our sages, the divine presence would speak out of his mouth. Shechina metaberes mitoch gronam. So if Hashem is speaking out of his mouth, of course there's he's a man of words. Hashem says all the words through his mouth. So the answer is like this. What does it mean that the languages of the nations are healed through Torah? Says the Shem Yishmuel, language is really the very nature of a nation. The language of a nation is the heart of the nation. Now we know that many of the nations are not so great, and their hearts aren't so great. And a lot of that evil is in their language. The first Ger Rebbe, the Chiddush HaRim, said that hearing French makes a person have thoughts of the wrong things between men and women. He said, because the whole culture of France is very dirty with this Yetzirah, unfortunately. So French itself, the language of French, pulls a person to that type of lack of tznius, lack of modesty. The power of Torah is such that Torah can transform the language. When I explain Torah, let's say in French, that means that French, with all of its impurity, is now attached to Torah, which is so pure and holy. And that pushes away the evil and brings a great purity and goodness into the language.
Rashi.
That's why Rashi keeps quoting things in French. Rashi throughout Chumash, Gemara, Belaz, in French it's this. So the Shem Yishmo said, Rashi didn't know Hebrew, he couldn't explain it to us in Hebrew. The answer is that Rashi knew how tough it was to overcome the Yetzirah of France. So he wanted to use French to teach Torah, to attach some of the language and the culture of France to Torah, to purify it, make it a little easier for people who are going to have to live with French, who are going to be with the French and hear French. So maybe that's why Moshe Rabbeinu explains the Torah in 70 languages. Moshe Rabbeinu, Hoil Moshe Be'eretz HaTorah Hazos, Moshe explains the Torah into 70 languages. Why? The Jews were all in the desert. They all spoke Lashon HaKodesh. But Moshe wants to elevate the languages. Those of us who are going to speak Russian or English, Moshe Rabbeinu already put Torah into these languages. By putting Torah into these languages, Moshe is elevating all these languages and enabling them to be less impure. So now Moshe, we say, the divine presence spoke out of his mouth. Maybe that's only when he spoke in Hebrew. When Moshe spoke in Hebrew, in Lashon HaKodesh, it was the divine presence speaking out of his mouth. But when Moshe starts to explain the Torah in all the other languages, that's not the divine presence speaking out of his mouth. The Ramban says, why is Hebrew called Lashon HaKodesh, the holy language? Because Torah, Nevuah, and holiness, they're all phrased in terms of Hebrew. Now, one second. If when Moshe Rabbeinu was explaining the Torah in the 70 languages, it was the Shekhinah speaking out of his mouth. All the languages had Hashem explain the Torah in them. So no, this was only for Moshe Rabbeinu. So this is the explanation of the Medrash. Rabbi Levi says, Torah heals the mouth. What's the proof? Moshe Rabbeinu says, Eilad Varim. Not that Moshe Rabbeinu said things. Moshe Rabbeinu has been saying things for a long time, but that's been in Hebrew. Now, Hoil Moshe Be'eretz HaTorah Azos. Now Moshe is explaining the Torah in 70 languages. Pasuk Hey, Be'evar Yardin Be'eretz Moav, on the other side of the Jordan, on the land of Moab, Ho'il Moshe Be'eretz HaTorah Azos Le'mar, Moshe began to explain this Torah, says Rashi, Be'eretz HaTorah B'shivim Lashon Pir Shalahem. Moshe in Parshas Tvarim explains the Torah in 70 languages. So when it's in 70 languages, it's not Hashem speaking through his mouth, it's Moshe speaking in these languages. Now one second, but how can Moshe speak in these languages? Moshe has all the deficiencies. He's kvad peh or kvad lashon. The answer is that the language was healed. Because he's explaining Torah, and he's using these languages for Torah, so the Torah is so pure, the Torah heals all of his infirmities, and the Torah elevates all these languages to be able to make them pure. So that's a very powerful lesson that we can learn from this week's Parsha, is that when we learn Torah, not only are we doing ourselves a favor, but whatever language we express the words of Torah in, we're elevating that language. So the fourth piece of the Shem Yishmo in this year, 1919, is from the Pasuk where Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people about how he appointed judges. And he tells the story that, all of you came to me, it was too hard for me. How can I carry alone your weights, your fights, your disputes? It's too much for me. So we have the custom to read this pasuk in the tune of Eicha, and that's based on the famous Medrash in Eicha, where the Medrash says that there were three who used the term Eicha. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Eicha Salavadi, and he saw the Jews in our glory. Yeshayahu saw the Jews in their sin. And finally, Yirmiyahu saw the Jews who are being punished already for their sin. So the question is, if Moshe Rabbeinu is seeing the Jews in our glory, this is the generation that's going to enter the land of Israel, why do we read the words Eicha in the tune of Tisha B'Av? Eicha Yashva Vadai. So on the one hand, it's the glory of the Jews, and yet it's somehow the destruction of the Jews. It's connected to Tisha B'Av. So how is it the destruction of the Jews if it's the glory of the Jews? So Shem Yishmol says an amazing thing. The Maharal had all sorts of disputes with the bishop of Prague. He used to give him a hard time. The bishop would give the Maharal a hard time. So there's a famous conversation where it's in Maharal's book, Be'er HaGola. The bishop came to the Maharal, and he said to the Maharal, how could you say that you are a holy nation, a chosen nation? You Jews are always fighting. You're always fighting this group, that group. How can you be a chosen people? So the Maharal says, it's not that we're bad. The fact that we're always fighting is a proof that we're a special nation. Because we're a special nation, we're more intellectual. We're less materialistic, we're more intellectual. And an intellectual, his ideas are his way, and someone else's ideas are someone else's way. So by definition, each one's mind is pulling him to a different direction. That's why we don't get along. This is what the Maharal told him. So Shem Yishmol says, I don't understand. It's a terrible thing not getting along. We lost the Beis HaMikdash because we didn't get along. So what's the Maharal saying? You know, it's a great thing we don't get along. We're great intellectual people. So Shem Yishmol says like this. The very nature of the Jewish people, they have great intellectual abilities, great decisiveness, and sure that I'm right, and he's sure he's right. That can be a positive thing if it's directed in the right way. Let's say we would all use it to study Torah. So I would study and come up with one set of what I think the laws are. You would study and come up with another set. And there would be fireworks between us. Gemara says in Kiddushim, and people are learning with each other, father and son, teacher with a student. It's like a struggle. It's like enemies, one at the other. But ultimately, Esvahe Basufa, there's a lot of love at the end. So we're all trying to understand the Torah. There's love from the dispute. You know, there's a famous story Gemara has about Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish used to ask many, many challenges on the Divrei Torah of his teacher, Rabbi Yochanan. And it was a whole thing where Rabbi Yochanan got upset, that he thought Reish Lakish was disrespectful. Reish Lakish died. But then Rabbi Yochanan was very upset. He said, no one can console me. Because when I had Reish Lakish, I was challenged all the time. Now people just tell me that I'm right. I'm unconsolable because I don't have Reish Lakish. In a more recent time, in Dvinsk, in Latvia, there were two great rabbis. There was Rav Meir Simcha Cohen, the author of the book Ar Sameach and Meshech Chachma. He was the Lithuanian rabbi. And there was Rav Yosef Rosen, the Rugachev Gaon. He was the Chassidish rabbi. And they fought with each other on halachic issues, learning all the time. And yet, at the funeral of Rav Meir Simcha, the Rugachev was unconsolable. They said, oh, what's going on? You know, you always fought with each other. He said, listen, that's That's the way Torah works. There's a lot of disputes, but within the disputes is a tremendous underlying love. The Maharal is saying that if the Jewish people would use our intellectualism for Torah, yeah, there'd be disputes, but ultimately there'd be a lot of love. Moshe Rabbeinu, our problem is that we use our nature of being so strong intellectually, not just for Torah, but to be divided from each other physically. So Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, Lo chalav adi se'es aschem. I can't carry you alone. Hashem Elokeichem yirbay aschem. God, your Lord, has increased you. It's a great thing that you've been so, that you're such great people. It's a blessing from God that you have very exalted souls and great intellectual abilities. But you're using it for tarchachem u'masachem v'rivchem. You're using this great individualism, this great intellectualism, to fight with each other, to be divided materially for each other, and to get into fights and disputes. And that's what's going to cause the exile. That's why we read it in the same tune as Eicha. Yes, this is the glory of the Jews, that we have great intellectual abilities and we can be very decisive. But we have to direct that in the right way. We should direct it to Torah learning. If we direct our uniqueness and our decisiveness, I'm my way, you're your way, and we're divided from each other because physically we're divided, I'm fighting for your money, you're fighting for my money, that's the beginning of the exile. And that's why we read it in the tune of Eicha. All right, these are some ideas of the Shmuel. Thank you.